Meeting to order for Environment Natural Resources for March 20th, 2007. Have members had an opportunity to look over the minutes from the last meeting? Representative Breinhart?
I would move approval of the minutes of yesterday?
19th. Okay, thank you. Representative Breinhart moves the minutes for March 19th. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. And today we're going to be taking up several bills. House File 1416 is the first on the agenda. I will move House File 1416 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the committee. I believe that it's on government operations. I believe that it is Finance Committee that it goes to, so we will refer it to Finance Committee. The bill is now before us. We have Representative John Ward with us, who's going to be introducing the bill. Welcome, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I am Representative Ward, here excited today about House File 1416. It's a up in the Kuna Range. We have a beautiful area called the Kuna Country Rec Area, and you should have in front of you a blue folder that has a lot of the information we'll be talking about today with House File 1416. And I imagine, and you should also have a letter from Congressman Overstar of support and former State Senator, State Rep John Sinison of support, and then former Rep Chris Haskampers will be today, who will be one of the testifiers, and I'll let them introduce themselves and talk about the Manheim Project. And many of you think that probably the space and NASA program was first started in Florida or Russia or wherever you think it was, but it actually was started in Crosby, Minnesota. And that's what we're here to talk to you about today is, and we have a replica of the Manheim Project. So without further ado, I'm gonna turn it over to former representative, State Representative Chris Haskamp to walk us through the House File 1416.
Welcome, Ms. Haskamp, former representative. So welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. You know, last time I think I was sitting in this chair introducing a bill, I was wheeling a empty chainsaw. And some of you may have remembered some of the efforts dealing with jet skis, and I have brought a chainsaw. Today, I'm bringing something that some may look like a Paul Bunyan egg beater. Actually, it's not. It's a model of a sculpture created by a local artist to commemorate an historic event that happened, as Representative Ward said, in Crosby, my hometown. Just to give you a little background, the bill does not deal specifically with this particular sculpture or project, but we are here because the gentleman sitting to my right, Mr. Lanson Hamilton, came to me after I was elected in 1988 and said that they had been working on trying to find a way to protect the area you're going to look at in your materials. An area that was reclaimed from a mine pit, a 15 mine pit that had filled up after they were no longer being mined, and created some incredibly beautiful, pure water full of like 400 feet deep mine lakes. And after it was reclaimed, the IRRRB began to invest a lot of money working with Mr. Hamilton and other local people, and they wanted to find a way to protect it and preserve it, and said this is a very special place that is sort of an unnatural, beautiful new area that people would enjoy. And so we started to work, Mr. Hamilton and others, with Mr. Bill Morrissey, the head of the parks, who wanted to sort of find a way to protect some areas similar for recreation that didn't want to spend the money and have all the regulations of a full state park. We did this in 1993, and if you remember, this was a very difficult economic time, and it was the last thing they wanted is to create more costly ventures. So we worked together with local groups and communities and city governments, and we said, if we could find a way to keep our local interests involved, that we just don't turn it over totally to the state, we will trust you with this beautiful area of 5,000 acres 15 mine lakes and other natural lakes and other land. And as you see the brochure in there, it's a beautiful area. And it's been 15 years plus later, and they're sort of dealing with things on a slow basis. But here's why we're here. One of the reasons we were able to turn this over is because Mr. Morrissey and us, the legislators, Senator Samuelson and I, basically negotiated that we would create a independent advisory group from a cross-section of major groups within the area to sit on a council or advisory committee. And they would work hand-in-hand with the DNR on developing it. We spent several years, and you'll see in the back of your packet, the blue folder, like this, we created this plan. And we had a lot of involvement and spent a lot of time to come up with it. I have highlighted in your book, in yellow, some key information that I think as a committee it would be helpful for you to know. And that is, number one, the advisory committee was supposed to be an independent group. After I left office in 2002, somehow it mysteriously was taken out of the law and it became an ad hoc committee of the DNR. We didn't even know this happened until Mr. Hamilton, who's now the chair of that advisory committee, asked me to come here to you to do this update bill and find out that we needed to maybe change some of the groups to make it current, add some term limits to it, not term limits, but terms to it, and to basically learn from what we had discovered. Well, we found out they repealed it. And Senator Samuelson said in his letter, neither of us would have allowed this to go forward without an independent group to advise the DNR and to work with them hand in hand. And so we're asking you to reinstate that important committee in order to make sure the promise that we made as legislators and community is going to be adhered to. The second part of the bill is that we also found out that they wanted to start to require stickering in the rec area soon to help them with enforcement and other things. But we also found out that two areas that would require a sticker are the Cross Mine Museum, which basically was built by RRRB money and local fundraising, and it's pretty much run on its own. And to put a sticker requirement on that land, as the letter in your packet indicates from the chairman of the board of that group, it would put it out of business. The other exemption we're asking for is for the Portsmouth Overlook, which is right off the highway and currently an area where we have the Manhai Historical Marker. So we need your authority, typically, to do it, to make an exempt. And the last part of the bill is that one of the reasons we're here is because we're going to celebrate 50 years that this event happened in 1957. And we're going to bring all the dignitaries and individuals. We're actually bringing this astronaut. They want to pass out that, you'll see the picture of him all over. But we're bringing the astronaut that went up in space and set all these records to Crosby this summer, and a lot of space age folks to honor this 50th anniversary. And we don't want the overlook, which is a blemish. You'll see the photos in your packet. We don't want that to detract from bringing all these people back home, and we want it to have a nice looking overlook. And the other reason is that the Parks Management Planning Group has been working on a plan to enhance the overlook, and they have a bike trail going through now and a snowmobile trail, and they'd like to make it into a nice area. So basically that's the bill, but we're here just to kind of give you an idea that Minnesota and my hometown is part of the history of this country, and we may come back to may need some more help next year, but we're appreciating what you have. Appreciate the support.
Thank you, Ms. Haskamp. And there's one other testimony.
Mr. Hamilton's testimony is in the packets, and he's just here to answer questions, or if any. Now, we know we have a limited time, so we didn't want to adult the committee anymore.
Except that I would like to make a couple of quick comments. One, I started on this effort already when I became land commissioner in Crow Wing County in 1979 or 80. The mines, in essence, were all done by that time. There was inventory piles that were still to be shipped, but there was no mining after that. We worked on this effort, promoting it and so forth. We met with Bill Morrissey, and I had known him before, and we talked to him about what we had in mind, and we were talking State Park at the time, and he said, no, what you people are really talking about, what you're describing, would be better operated as a state recreation area. And, of course, when he explained that to us, we certainly readily agreed. The other thing that's happened, we went all the way through the 1980s working on it, developing on it, and then finally Chris Haskamp became involved very capably. And as a result, by 1993, it became law and became a state recreation area, the first one in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman, there was one thing I'd like to add, is that Mr. Hamilton, with his group from the IRRB local group, raised the money to actually buy the land that the overlook is on and turned it over to the state. So a lot of what we're asking for is on land that was originally purchased by local residents.
Thank you. Any questions at all for
Mr. Chair?
Any of the testifiers? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this looks good, and I think we should support this bill. And I apologize, Mr. Chair, but procedural question. Where did we refer this bill to? I wasn't paying attention at the start.
It's being referred to the Finance Committee.
The Big Finance Committee or Environment
Finance? Big Finance Committee. Okay. And then from there, it will be re-referred to the Environment Finance. That's where we'll probably go from there to be considered for the omnibus bill.
Okay. At some point, does this need to go to government operations?
It does not. And the reason is because if it's going to be rolled into an omnibus bill, it's exempt from some of the requirements as far as going to government operations, including advisory committees and things of that sort.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for the testifiers? Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to welcome Chris back and Representative Haskamp. It's good to see you again.
Good bill. Thank you, all those Representative Wagenius, Representative Osmond. I think that's all I remember that were here when I was here, but thank you for helping us make this a possibility, because I know you're very supportive, so thank you.
Great. Any other comments or questions at all? Seeing none, Representative Ward.
One last comment, Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much for your support. We look for your support and appreciate it. And being fiscally responsible, if you're not going to use your blue folder, we could use it back, please. Because we have been using these around in displays all over the place. So if you're not going to use it, you're welcome to it. We're more than happy to leave it for you. But if you don't want it, we'd like it back.
Okay, thank you, Representative Ward.
Mr. Chair, so my personalized folder is going to go to someone else? There's fiscal conservatism, and then there's just radicalism. This is crazy.
I'll just look for somebody else named Joe Hoppe.
Good luck.
Ms. Haskamp.
I appreciate if you would take it and read it. I used to have staff that did this, but I did all this myself, and I'd like you to kind of read it because it's interesting stuff. So I kind of hope you do take it.
Thank you, Ms. Haskamp. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Seeing none, I will renew the motion that House File 1416 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed. We now have House File 1483, Representative Winkler. And I will move House File 1483 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. Welcome, Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I would appreciate your favorable consideration of House File 1483. There is an amendment, the A7 amendment.
And I will move the A070432 amendment to get it in the shape that the author would like. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is amendment is adopted to the bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, members, The bill essentially provides some funding, matching funding for the Three Rivers Park District and some additional statutory authority to enable them to deal with some impaired waters in the Three Rivers Park District. And I'm going to be very brief and have John Barden from the Three Rivers Park District describe the specifics of what they're looking to do. But essentially the problem is that there are seriously impaired waters within the boundaries of Three Rivers Park District, which is the only independent park district which is statutorily established in the state. So it is sort of a unique situation. They're looking for authority and some matching dollars simply to address impaired waters issues that they believe are pressing.
Great. And if you could state your names for the tape, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Barton. I'm the Water Resources Manager for Three Rivers Park District. Three Rivers Park District owns approximately 27,000 acres of land in the Twin Cities metropolitan area, and most of these properties either abut or encircle valuable water resources, including Medicine Lake, Lake Independence, Lake Rebecca, and Elm Creek. Currently, 9 of these water bodies are listed as impaired by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and our data indicate that an additional 8 lakes will be listed soon. Inclusion on the impaired waters list basically means that the lake is not suitable for swimming or other body contact recreation for significant periods of the summer. These lakes experience frequent algae blooms, making the lake look like split pea soup, and these algae blooms shade out beneficial aquatic plants that are often replaced by exotic species such as Eurasian water milfoil or curly-leaf pondweed. In addition, when the algae die, the decomposition process uses up oxygen, frequently leading to fish kills, and generally the fish that die are the game fish species, which are then replaced by carp and bullheads. In a number of our lakes, the park district is only able to maintain swimming beaches by encircling the swimming facility with a beach curtain to basically keep out lake water. The process of the degradation is getting worse in many of the lakes, and experience has shown that the longer the degradation is allowed to continue, the more difficult and expensive it is to correct, and the longer it takes. When lakes are impaired, the Clean Waters Act requires that a total maximum daily load study be completed to develop a restoration plan. The completion dates, unfortunately, for many of the lakes we're dealing with, the TMDL completion dates, are 7 to 8 years in the future. And this proposed legislation would allow the Three Rivers Park District to accelerate the TMDL development process and begin to correct the water quality problems in the short term. A number of the watershed management organizations that we deal with, that we have lakes within, have very limited resources and simply will not be able to undertake the TMDL process without assistance. This bill would enhance the ability of Three Rivers Park District to improve the water quality and restore the recreational use of our incredibly valuable regional aquatic resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barton. And Mr. Holton, you want to testify?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a prepared statement. I know how short of time this committee is. I just would say that this idea is intended to take the on a geopolitical basis, using the park district, the statutory creatures, to act in concert with the water entities that exist in our area, our backyard, if you will, and bring resources to the table, such as money and other expertise, and try to jumpstart these projects before these, not only do these lakes becoming impaired, but the value of the large park then becomes drastically lessened as well. And we have more need for these as our area continues to grow. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holton. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking at the amendment that was passed and just reading through the bill, I'm looking at the words drainage in here and wondering, does the Three Rivers Park District then become a drainage authority under this bill, or would it have to be in a joint powers board with drainage authorities and dealing with the different consequences of that?
Mr. Holton?
Chairman, with that amendment, if one assumes that clause number 7 in the bill, which deals with draining, ditches and other similar activities, is a new authority for the park district, and it could only be undertaken in the context of a joint powers agreement with an existing water authority. So in that case, you could say that the park district would become a part of an entity that by agreement is going to tackle a water issue that involves drainage, and it would have that authority only if it was in collaboration with that existing entity.
Representative Hansen.
Is there any precedent for that of any other park district or park board obtaining that authority?
Mr. Chairman, Three Rivers Park District is a governmental entity in and of itself. It's got a police department. It can enact ordinances, et cetera, et cetera. There is no other statutorily defined regional park district in the state of Minnesota, and therefore the answer to your question is no.
And Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a question, and I'm not sure if it's directed toward you or if there might be somebody in the audience who could answer it. I'm just assuming, and I could be corrected, that this is kind of the process, at the beginning of the process of Clean Water Legacy, to use general fund monies to clean up waters that have been designated as impaired. And if that's the case, then my question would be, or even if it's not the case, then my question would be, how do we prioritize the use of state general fund money? And are you first in the queue, or are there other ones in the queue? And how do we determine that? That's not clear to me right now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scalzi, I think part of the answer is that this is a state match for dollars that the Three Rivers District is bringing to the table. So it's a little bit unique in that sense. I'm not sure to what extent the questions of finance are supposed to be addressed here versus in the Finance Committee, and I don't know how strict the chair is about that division. Some are very much so, but I would just say that it might be. It's not part of an orchestrated strategy on Clean Water Legacy. It's designed to address a unique situation.
And Representative Arginius.
This is a follow-up in Representative Johnson. You mentioned that the TMDL for these lakes would not be done for, did you say, 7 or 8 years? Just tell us about that.
Mr. Barton?
Mr. Chair, Representative. Yeah, when lakes are placed on the impaired waters list, there is a completion date required for many of the lakes that we're dealing with, although the data would indicate that the quality does not meet the state standards, and they will be listed. They haven't been listed as of today, and typically the communities, local communities, are allowed a couple of years in order to complete the TMDL. And generally, because of funding issues, et cetera, they tend to take as much time as they need, or as much time as the completion date allows. So for a number of the lakes, the completion date is probably projected at 2010 to 2012. So it would be an intent of the Park District to move those time frames up significantly.
Representative Hoppe.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know who my question's for. I'm following up on Representative Hansen's line of questioning. And I'm wondering what the counties, the townships, the SWCDs, the conservation districts think about this, and how is this going to work with potential duplication of effort or not? And I don't know who to address the question to. I don't know. I know Representative Hansen is up looking for answers as well. But
anyone have Mr. Holton?
I thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hoppe, since we introduced this bill, as we anticipated, it has brought reaction from those very groups. We've been working with a number of them. I'm sure somebody will be here today to testify. And in any case, we have a new approach. You're always going to have some level of controversy. The amendment that we put on the bill just a little while ago was I think, a giant step towards many of their concerns. There's more work to be done with that in this bill. What our hope is that we can get enough of a what a former member used to call peace in the valley to get the bill passed while still having a bill that does something and would allow us to act quickly. We're also speaking with the representatives from the League of Cities. And bear in mind, this legislation takes no authority away from any existing entity today. And some of those that are lacking some of the things that they need, we can maximize them by bringing those things to the table. I'm not just talking about $5 million bringing that to the legislature. I'm talking about out in the field where there's resource and personnel issues and other things that are lacked in one place or another that we can supply. But yes, you'll hear from those people, Representative Hockey.
One more.
Representative Hockey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not necessarily a follow-up question, but if this passes, a process question, when you look at the map that you handed out, and you look at Whale Tail Lake, for example, when the Three Rivers Park, the Gale Woods Park that touches Whale Tail Lake only touches a small part of the lake, does then Three Rivers assume responsibility for the whole lake? And then just using that example, the same question would hold true for other lakes or bodies of water?
Mr. Barton?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we would be very interested in taking the initiative to start the TMDL process for Whale Tail Lake or any other lake that we have property abutting, where basically the TMDL process is not underway. So I guess the answer to that is yes, we would hope to take the initiative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hopping, of course that is in the context of only doing so pursuant to a joint powers agreement. So it wouldn't be sort of a unilateral grab of authority by the Park District in that case.
Any further questions? We do have a couple others who want to testify. Mr. Ray Bowen. Welcome, Mr. Bowen.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ray Bowen, and here representing the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. And to my left is Kevin Bogolski. Kevin is the administrator for Nine Mile Creek Watershed District. And to my far right is Eric Eagleton, who is the administrator for Minnehaha Creek, and Joel Carlson, who is the lobbyist for the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. I'd like to begin by saying this particular bill obviously raises some very serious concerns for us, because what it in effect is doing is putting a watershed management area or organization, developing another watershed management organization within existing watershed management organizations. In our case, we have two watershed districts that, in fact, would overlap with this entity. And they're already dealing with many of the issues that they here wanted to deal with. So we obviously feel it would be a tremendous duplication of effort. The amendment obviously, makes that a little less clear, but I'm not sure exactly of all the ramifications of the amendment. The other thing too is if you look at this general piece of legislation, there's not one reference in here to any 103 statute, 103 B, C, D, E, or F. Not one reference. So my question is where's the oversight under, what are the procedures? What laws are they following when they, in fact, do get involved in this? And then the issue of the border waters, which just came up, is another issue of concern to us. Drainage is a huge concern, because if you look at the one provision on page 3.7, repair, improve, relocate, modify, consolidate, and abandonment all or part of drainage systems. That is a strict purview of the drainage authority. And frankly, I don't know even with the amendment if a drainage authority could do a joint powers and use and use that kind of governance structure on a drainage authority, I think that would be very dubious at best. But anyway, those are just some of my general comments on the legislation. I'd like to turn it over to Joel Carlson to make some more specific comments.
Mr. Carlson, if you could state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Joel Carlson. I represent the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District, which is one of the largest urban watersheds in the country, encompassing about 181 square miles. Mm-hmm. It's got a property value of about $38 billion. It goes from the end of Long Lake all the way to Minnehaha Falls, and where it exits at the Mississippi River. And it is one of the most aggressive watershed districts in the country regarding water quality, and they're very proud of that record. We have some problems with the legislation as it relates to overlapping jurisdiction authorities. You know, Minnehaha Creek has already set water quality goals and pollutant load limits for 62 of the lakes in its district, including 9 of which are impaired, and they have developed TMDLs for those 9. We see this as actually counter to the legislative auditor's report that you heard earlier in the year, where they talk about 14 state and federal agencies that already provide water oversight authority, 11 different types of local entities that carry out on-the-ground activities for watershed management, and they were looking at streamlining the process, not enlarging it. To the extent the legislation overlaps areas that are already served by existing water management organizations, we think that it would be the best use of public resources to have the Three River Parks work within the existing framework that is in place and not develop an additional layer of water management in areas that are currently served. If they have portions of their park district that are not served by a WMO, a ditch authority, a watershed district, that may be an area where they may want to focus their attention. I'd like to introduce Eric Evenson, who's the administrator from Minnehaha Creek, and talk a little bit about the work that the district has done right within the Three Rivers Park district right now relative to water quality and the very things that this match would be spent on.
Welcome, Mr. Evenson, if you could state your name for the tape.
I'm Eric Evenson. I'm the District Administrator of the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. Briefly, the Watershed District, the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District, has just finished its update of its 10-year 509 plan, 10-year water management plan. That plan lays out a capital improvement program to address the impaired waters as well as all the other water and related natural resource issues within the watershed district. Earlier today, I pulled out those sub-watersheds that have waters adjoining the Three Rivers Park District, and over the next 10 years, the Minnehaha Watershed District has committed to spending about $42 million on helping to address impaired waters and to address other water quality issues within the watershed district. So we're very prepared to come before, to stand up to the plate, take ownership over some of the problems out there, and work with the Three Rivers Park District to address the issues. Now, dealing with impaired waters is a lot more difficult, as all of you know, than just looking into the water itself. You've got to deal with both the external and the internal loads on these impaired waters. To address the external loads, you will need to go up into the upper parts of the sub-watershed, whether it be Harley Lake, Whaletail Lake, what have you. To go up into those upper portions of the watershed district, you're going to have to look at a number of different techniques to address the impairment. And there's three principal ways it's done. One is through the land use authorities that our cities have. One is through regulatory authorities, which watershed districts have. The other is through capital programs. And then we can get into the issues of education and land acquisition, all these other things go along with it. But those are the three main legs on the stool, if you would. I've got some concerns over the proposed amendment, because they talk about exclusive source. We constantly are in discussions, sometimes heated discussions, with a regulator or other units of government within our watershed as to what is the exclusive, who has the responsibility for what. We're typically able to work those out. So I've got some concerns about this because I think it's just going to exacerbate existing issues with who's responsible for what. The way the current system is set up works out very well for to deal with impaired waters. And frankly, we're probably the envy of the nation. In fact, I know we're the envy of many, many states. And are looked as a leadership, Minnesota's looked at the leadership role of addressing these impairments largely because of how water management is structured. Under watershed law, cities have to develop surface water management plans, make those part of the comprehensive plans, which then become part of their zoning requirements. That addresses the land use component. The proposed legislation does not address that and cannot address that unless they start getting into city land use law issues. The watershed district has taxing authority, and we're able to raise significant funds to address these things independent of coming to the state and asking you for money. Not that I'd be more than willing to accept any money the state might have coming our way. So I think that what we're dealing with here is, I using a fire hose to fix something that can be fixed with an eyedropper, frankly.
Mr. Chairman, just a few quick comments from Kevin Bogalki, then we'll get out of here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Kevin Bogalki. I'm the administrator for the Nine Mile Creek Watershed District. We're a watershed district that covers about 50 square miles in the west metro area. And we work very well with Three Rivers Park District, but we also have similar concerns as Ray and Joel and Eric have expressed about the duplication of the existing authorities and processes that are currently in place in the metro with watershed districts and watershed management organizations. With the language, in particular with waters bordering park land or reserves that the Three Rivers Park District has authority over, that would pretty much come into play as giving them authority over the whole, what's known as the western branch of Nine Mile Creek, as Nine Mile Creek flows into Bryant Lake, which is bordered by Three Rivers Park District land. We're currently working on a project jointly with Three Rivers Park District to address water quality issues in Bryant Lake as well as in the Anderson Lake complex in Eden Prairie. And those projects are, that project is totaling close to $2 million in itself, but it also includes some land use components, as Eric had mentioned, that with this language, the Three Rivers Park District doesn't have the jurisdiction to implement, and that is critical to addressing water quality concerns. It's not just what's in the stream or in the particular lake or other water body. It's actually what can be done on the land itself, and that's where watershed districts and other water management organizations and cities come into play, and that's what where our position is on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that being said, we have talked with the author. We have talked with Mr. Holden, and we are beginning discussions on this issue. And clearly, if they've got some issues and some problems in or outside of our areas, we'd be happy to work with them and see what we can do to work with them and help them out.
Thank you, Mr. Bowen. Any questions for the testifiers? Any other testifiers?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnson. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I can be very brief. My name is Craig Johnson. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. We do have significant concerns with this bill, despite the amendment that was made, I think, to try and lessen those concerns. The wording on the amendment says that the Three Rivers Park District cannot enter into an action unless it is pursuant to a joint powers agreement with another entity having water management authority. That, in many cases, will exclude the cities from having any say involved in this at all. They would be able to go ahead with all of the authorities listed in this bill without a local unit of government other than a watershed district, for example, being involved. The powers that they are given in this bill are very expansive and include having authority to work on sewer, stormwater systems, any number of systems that right now are city-owned, city-operated, and carry federal permits that the city is both civilly and criminally liable for, as well as financially liable for. So we will definitely be working with the author and with the supporters of on these potential impacts. I'm sure that was not their intent to cause those kind of potential conflicts for cities. But
frankly, I think the league's position would be that we feel park districts are well suited to manage their properties as park districts, and we are not looking for an additional role for them in managing city and regional-wide water management. We already have water management organizations and watershed districts in the metro area that need to be serving those needs and are working with cities as partners in that role. But we certainly welcome their help in addressing the properties that they have, because many of them are very sensitive areas. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any questions? Seeing none, any other testimony? Representative Winkler, any final comments?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, just very quickly. What the watershed districts were saying was entirely true, and they do a great job of managing the water resources within their authority. The project list developed by the Three Rivers Park District are for waters that fall, except in one instance, that fall outside of that jurisdiction. And if the existing system was working so well for those waters, they probably would not be having the impairment issues they do, which is not something that is a great challenge, at least for Minnehaha Creek. They have the resources and the authority to deal with the issue. It's those areas that fall outside their jurisdiction that really are the challenge. And again, the key point here is that there is no grab of authority, because they cannot do it except in partnership. So this essentially allows them to bring resources to the table that would not otherwise be there to address impaired waters in this geographic area.
Thank you. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my question is for the author. You got to realize this isn't coming from a Harvard attorney. This is coming from a landscaper. There's language in the bill here about the amendment specifically. It's got joint power agreement language. You got power of municipalities, eminent domain. Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, we should be going to local government with this. And I also wonder, with all the wetland provisions, if we shouldn't be going to Representative Hansen's wetland committee. And I'm just wondering, wasn't the motion to send it to Representative Wagenius's committee?
The motion is for Finance Committee. Representative Carlson's.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, and then would the intention be that it be re-referred to local government from there?
Representative Wagenius, was she? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Hansen.
The back of her chair. I did talk with Representative Wagenius, and she would be asking for it from Finance, and then she would refer it to my subcommittee. Our intent would be to look at it over the interim and not take any action right now, because there's very many issues here that are very, very broad, and that we try to get the stakeholders to talk over the interim.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate knowing that, because I don't have a dog in this particular fight, but I sure have a lot of friends have been up at that table lately, and I like to stand with my friends when I can. And I was wondering if the motion could include that we're sending this on without recommendation, so that we let the subcommittee really kind of work. It's such a preliminary stage right now, I feel uncomfortable giving any signal of approval on this, but yet I have no objection to it moving on.
And Representative Winkler, do you have any comments to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, the only comment would be that it's not in a preliminary stage. It is in this body, but it has been through, I think, three Senate committee hearings, and the amendment that we brought today was as a result of that process. So it's not gone unexamined thus far. And in fact, what the bill in its current shape, I think, reflects significant conversation among the stakeholders about what approach makes the most sense. So I would hope it would be passed with recommendation.
The alternative is not passive. Well, any further comments at all?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Osmond.
I'd like to make a motion that we the motion include without recommendation, and then we move it to Finance.
Okay. Motion has been made that we do not make recommendation on the bill and refer it to the Committee on Finance. Any discussion on it? Oh, It is my motion, so I would accept that as a friendly, friendly amendment to it. So any other discussion on the bill? Seeing none, I will renew the motion that the that House File 1483 be re-referred to the Committee on Finance without recommendation.
As amended.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails. Thank you, Representative Brinkberg. So next we have House File 1280. Representative Hortman is coming down. And I will move House File 1280 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hortman.
I'll briefly introduce the bill while the amendments are being passed out, and then I'll review the amendments. House File 1280 would authorize a grant program through the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency for truckers to install idling idling reduction technology. What does ACU stand for?
Auxiliary power unit.
The purpose of the bill is to reduce the hazardous emissions that are coming from trucks. A lot of the time that trucks are running is to keep somebody warm who's sleeping inside and not to move goods across the country. And what I'm asking this committee to really focus on is the policy issue, and I'm very hopeful that you'll move it on to the Environment Finance Division, where the finance issues that pertain to the bill can be examined in conjunction with all the other financial decisions you need to make. But I think the policy is really good. When you look at, in the state of Minnesota, the level of greenhouse gas emissions, and then separately, particulate matter, diesel fumes are a big contributor to that. Transportation sector is the largest contributor of greenhouse gas emissions in the state of Minnesota, and I give the trucking industry a lot of credit for coming forward with a proposal, working with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to try to allay their any concerns that they would have about the bill. If everybody has the amendments, what I'll do is I'll quickly explain. The A1 amendment was an amendment drafted in response to concerns by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Wisconsin has a grant program similar to this. And my understanding is that in Wisconsin, some of the trucking companies got a little bit more than their fair share. And so MPCA's perspective was, if we're going to do this here, let's make sure that no one company is kind of getting all of these grant funds. And so the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair, would ensure that no more than 20% of the grant funds in each year could be awarded to a single applicant, so no one trucking company could clean it up. And then 25% of the grant funds are reserved for applicants owning less than 20 trucks. So it's kind of to tilt it more to ensuring a benefit for smaller truckers.
Okay. And I will move the H1280A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is amended. Representative Hortman, to the bill as amended.
Okay, and then the second amendment is the A2 amendment, and it deletes rulemaking, and it inserts the words authorizing rulemaking. And the reason for this was to deal with a concern by MPCA about the fiscal impact it would have on their agency, where it's really initially we're asking them to be doing something that they don't have the resources right now to be undertaking. There's obviously a fiscal impact of the bill because it's appropriating money for a grant program, but this deals with the fiscal impact on the agency actually completing the work. And one of the things that would be appropriate either for this committee to be thinking about or in the next committee is thinking about using some of the money that's proposed for the grant program to
for the agency to support the program. So this amendment just addresses some of the other concerns that the NPCA had raised.
Thank you. I will move the H-1280A2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have with me today John Hauslauden from the Minnesota Trucking Association and Doug Cohen. So John would testify first.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'm John Hauslauden, president of the Minnesota Trucking Association. Our association represents about 700 entities, trucking companies, and their affiliated vendors from across the state of all sizes and shapes. As part of our continuing efforts to help protect the environment, the Minnesota Trucking Association was the first state trucking association to endorse and participate in a new program called the Smart Way Transport Partnership. Think of Energy Star for various pieces of the electronic equipment out there. SmartWay is a voluntary collaboration between the U.S. EPA and the freight industry designed to increase energy efficiency while significantly reducing greenhouse gases and air pollution. Carriers and shippers voluntarily agree to incorporate a variety of practices and technologies to reduce fuel consumption. And because of those efforts, I'm pleased to announce that last October, our association received the first ever SmartWay Excellence Award for a state association in October of 2006. I share all that simply to say that the trucking industry has been doing a lot of things already on its own on a voluntary basis to address the issues of fuel consumption and emissions. The EPUs are just one more part of that. We are here today to support House File 1280, which encourages the use of auxiliary power units, or APUs. As is already said, and you do have a handout, I believe, that you received that shows a picture of one of these. If you can imagine right now, if you don't have one of these on your truck and it's a cold day, you have to run that engine to stay warm. Or if you're in a hot part of the country, you need to run it to be cool. Or maybe you just want power to run some of your appliances, so you need to run that for electricity. And these are small auxiliary generators that are mounted on the frame rail of the truck. And I guess you can think of it like generators used on RVs, if you've ever gone on one of those road trips with an RV. When you want to power everything, it's that small engine that you're running everything off to make it comfortable and livable. And what's the best thing about APUs is they literally sip fuel from the truck's tank at a rate of about one-tenth or less than that of the main engine, so they're very efficient. So with me today to further explain the benefits of a grant program designed to reduce idle time in heavy trucks is Doug Cohen, president of Rochester Cartage, and he happens to be chairman of the Minnesota Trucking Association this year.
Welcome to the committee. Can you state your name, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Doug Cohen, Rochester Cartage, down in the corner southeast from Minnesota. I'm owner and president of Rochester Cartage and chairman of the Minnesota Trucking Association. My company was started in 1985 with one truck and one trailer. Before I entered the trucking business, I had 21 years with Fred All Foods, grocery stores. After I closed the last store in Rochester, I went to work for Rochester Cartage in 1988. Mm-hmm. I was their general manager. In 2004, I bought out the two owners of the company. Today we are a dry van and refrigerated based carrier. We have an office staff of six and six company drivers and 16 independent contractors. Those are individuals who own their own trucks and then they utilize my trailers. We haul food products throughout the United States for companies like Seneca Foods in Rochester. They're the world's largest vegetable canner. Rochester Meat Company, Kemp's Marigold Ice Cream, Rochester Cheese Sales, and North Star Foods in St. Charles. Rochester Cartage, my duties are many. I take care of all aspects of safety, including the state and federal regulations, personnel issues, maintenance, equipment, human resources, customer relations, and I oversee payables and receivables. I'm here today to support House File 1280. Rochester Cartage is in the early stages of shopping for and pricing APUs. These units are somewhat cost prohibitive, ranging in price from $1,500 to $10,000 per unit. My company, as with many other trucking companies in Minnesota, recognize the value of reducing emissions and fuel consumption, but struggle with realizing that goal because of constricted cash flows. The cost of doing business as a trucking company has risen dramatically in the past few years. In 2007, new EPA regulations took effect. The result was additional capital costs, nearly $10,000 per truck. That was added to the price of the truck just for the engine. In addition, fuel costs, as we all know, is up. It's up over 100% since 2002. Steel, aluminum, and other inputs used for making trucks and trailers have risen dramatically, and I also have to continue to pay my drivers and my office staff a fair wage to remain competitive in my business. On the revenue side, the freight has softened. From my previous 21 years in the grocery business, I've seen this decline in spending year after year. While it's true that we all have to eat, the consumer stretches their grocery dollar considerably. This trend has impacted the volume of freight collected by my company. Other trucking companies across the state suffer. The housing market slowed down. Other types of freight are also down. Ice cream, lumber, appliances, auto manufacturing parts. You may be asking me why I haven't installed these units today, because I could have lower operating costs. The answer is because we operate on 1% to 2% margin. House File 1280 will not only help businesses like mine overcome cash flows, but will conserve our natural resources and ensure that fewer pollutants will enter the atmosphere. Mr. Chair and committee and members, thank you for your time, and I hope that you support House File 1280.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Yes, Representative Dill.
Thank you. You talked about fuel consumption. I just wondered if you had anything more specifically. First off, how much power do these generators put out? How many watts? And then how much does a run-of-the-mill over-the-road truck use at idle, gallons per hour versus gallons per hour on this? You talked about the difference.
Mr. Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, the truck will use approximately 1 to 1.25 gallons per hour of diesel fuel to operate, to either cool or heat the truck. The generator unit will use 1/10 of that. In regards to wattage output, there would be enough to run heat or air and electricity for the cab. The main concerns are heat and air conditioning. The heat uses about 0.04 gallons compared to the cooling, which uses about 1/10 of the gallon of fuel. It's much easier to heat the individual unit than it is to cool it.
Thank you. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like the concept. It's something we should think about. And I have some questions that maybe you could take down, and if you get to environmental finance, I didn't want to just leave you on the spot then. I thought I'd ask you, but you know, my math showing $2 million, and it's not exact, but $1,500 to $10,000 roughly would cover maybe 200 to 1,000 vehicles, and I'm just wondering if there's another instrument we can think of that would make a bigger bang for the buck eventually. You don't have to answer it now, but and I'd be interested in the results in Wisconsin. You know, we're all talking about CO2 emissions. We're all trying to think of cost per CO2. I don't know if anybody's done any calculations, but those are things that I might ask you should you get to environmental finance, and I hope you do.
Any other questions? Any other testimony? Seeing none, I will renew the motion that House File 1280, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, I think when he said ice cream, it woke up half the committee.
Okay, next on the agenda, Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 2144.
Representative Gardner moves House File 2144. He recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This concept for an ombudsman for groundwater pollution education and assistance came out of the two leaking landfill situations we have in the Southeast Metro and in my district with the Highway 96 landfill. We had some lengthy discussions about relations between the state and those communities in recent weeks in environmental finance and in this committee. I would like to suggest this idea to help build a greater trust between taxpayers and their state government. I don't think it's because the PCA isn't skilled at researching and presenting hard, fast data about health risks and so on, but I think that sometimes if you don't have a background in it, risk analysis or advanced statistics or something like that, it's very difficult for the person who's wondering if they can drink your water to know whether the information they're getting is really, really helping them. What we'd be looking at is someone who would be independent in the agency who can be the go-to person at the PCA for people who are in a community facing groundwater contamination so they can find out the basics. What's the legal process for how these are addressed? What are responsible parties' responsibilities? What kind of mitigation is effective? And so on. And I thought I would just throw out the idea here. And, Mr. Chair, because I have talked to the PCA just today, and because I don't know if this is exactly the right instrument to help create that greater information flow between affected communities and the state government, I would actually request that we lay this bill on the table, and I'd like to talk to people during the interim about what might the best instrument be. And I recognize the deadlines are tight, too, which is why I'm not going to cram this through.
Okay. Representative wants to, I think, I will just lay it on the table. So thank you, Representative Gardner. Next, we have Representative Shemansky. And I will move House File 76 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Welcome, Representative Shemansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today I'd like to present House File 76. Do you have the delete all amendment?
Okay. I will move the delete all amendment. It's now being passed out.
Yes.
But I will move the A070478 amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is amended. Representative Shemansky.
Okay. The reason for the delete all amendment was to bring it into the same similar shape to the Senate file, the companion file in the Senate file 115. Today I have a couple of gentlemen that would like to present information on the South Fork Pearl River Canoe Route designation. I would like to first introduce Wayne Jacobson, and he is a president of Jacobson Environmental Services in the Watertown area, and he's familiar with the canoe, with the Pearl River in his community. And then I have Andy Cotter from Hutchinson, from the South Fork Pearl River Canoe Association. So, Mr. Jacobson, would you proceed?
Okay, thank you. And if you could state your name for the tape, Mr. Jacobson.
My name is Wayne Jacobson. I'm a professional soil scientist, professional wetland scientist, operating Jacobson Environmental, statewide providing wetland services and other environmental services to public and private sector clients. This winter, working with the local Lions Club and the cities of Mayer and Watertown, I had a chance to go out and clear 8 miles of tree snags on the South Fork Pearl River. I've been working with the river, doing river cleanups just on a volunteer basis for a number of years, and this is something that I discussed previously for a number of years with the Department of Natural Resources. And basically, you know, I was met by several residents when I went out on the river, and they had, most of them had encouraged me and were very glad that I had done the work. I had also been encouraged by a number of the local Lions Club as well in that regard. And I just wanted to point out that, you know, there was a small group of landowners that were concerned, and I think their concern really relates to the siting of a proposed regional park that was discussed a year earlier, and they came out against the tree clearing. And I just want to assure you committee members that what we did out there as far as clearing, you know, was run through the DNR and through Carver County officials, and we tried to do a real proper job with that project. I guess with that, I just want to urge you to pass the bill and open up this canoeing stretch, you know, to all the youth and the people that will be using this river. There are some people here also that remember a historic canoe race that we used to hold every year between Mayer and Watertown, and they're real excited that we opened up that stretch to recreational canoeing again. So thank you.
And Mr. Cotter, if you could state your name for the record.
Committee Chair and members, my name is Andy Cotter. I'm from Hutchinson. And our group, the South Buffalo River Association, which I'm a member of, has promoted this bill. And you'll see that there's three handouts that are there. And one of them is our original letter that we have written to our representatives and senators for this bill. And also you'll see an editorial in the Hutchinson Leader supporting this bill as well. And then we have from the Crow Association in support of the bill. We are hoping that this will help promote the South Fork River and bring more awareness to the community. And as our organization, we have done canoe trips down the South Fork River pretty much for the last 4 years as existence of our organization. And we find it to be very scenic. There is some snags. Some are getting cleared out. And with this bill passed and the South Fork River being part of the canoe designation, it would help keeping those clear, and also hopefully we're going to get more people to actually canoe the river and enjoy the scenery. Any questions?
Okay. Any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hoppe.
I have a couple of questions for Mr. Jacobson.
Yes,
Mr. Jacobson, you said that you ran this when you went and cleared the river, you ran this through the DNR in Carver County. Who specifically at the DNR in Carver County authorized you to do any work?
The person that has the most direct jurisdiction is Julie Ekman, the area hydrologist, and she had emailed me the state regulation that says that it's legal to clear obstructions from the river, and the DNR has jurisdiction between the OHW of the protected watercourse, which is defined from bank to bank. And at all times when we were doing our trimming, we were within that OHW or that bank-to-bank portion on the river ice. And actually, we were trying to only remove the portion of those snags that were forming an obstruction, actually. And so we didn't remove all the snag. We left some of the wood along the bank because I did retrieve a year earlier an American Fisheries Society publication that deals with removing tree snags for recreational improvement in rivers and exactly how to do that. And at that time, I did consult with DNR Area Fisheries Supervisor Darrell Eliason on that. Some of the landowners, again, you know, were upset because, you know, they don't want to see, you know, I think other improvements made to the river recreational-wise, but this snake clearing project was only purely, you know, dealing with making this a canoeable stream. That's all it was. And I did speak with the conservation officer twice, and we went over what I did, and he said that in his mind everything was fine. So again, you know, we did try to do a proper job when we were out there.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And who at Carver County?
I'm a member, actually, of the Cut River County Water and Environment Committee, so I sit on that committee, and the head of that committee is Paul Moline, and so I did confer, actually, with the entire committee that deals with natural resources in Carver County.
Any further questions?
One more, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hockey.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobson. You said that the area residents were glad that you did this and that they encouraged you. Are any of them here to testify?
Yes, they are. This gentleman over here, you know, in the Hutchinson area, and then we also have Mr. Jerry Hirsch, from the city of Watertown, from the local Lions Club, that wanted to sponsor the activity. And there were a number of Lions that have expressed their support. And also, I did run this through the city councils of both Watertown and Mayor before I did the project, and they had indicated their approval as well.
Any further questions?
That's it for now, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from any other members?
Actually, I could add one thing. We have some maps of the South Fork River our association has created. I've only got 9 of them, but if anybody's interested in them, I'd be more than happy to give them to anybody who'd like them. Thank you.
Is there a Mr. Tom Griffith here? Would you like to testify? Sure. Welcome, Mr. Griffith. If you could state your name for the tape.
Tom Griffith from Watertown, Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson and committee, for letting me come and voice our concerns about this bill. I didn't realize we could do that, so I just left work early today and I'm not really prepared. Our family's owned land along the south fork of the Crow River for over 40 years, and have maintained it in a natural setting, and I'm pretty much representing 100% of the landowners between State Highway 25 and State Highway 7. The bill that's being proposed right now, if you look at the DNR website, it designates the North Fork, Middle Fork, and South Fork of the Crow River as a state canoe route. In fact, they have a map that designates it, has mile markers on the North Fork and the South Fork. They do note that the North Fork is the more prevalent canoeing river because of its water stability and such. The South Fork is pretty much in its natural state. It's a fragile ecosystem. And the landowners in that area have maintained it that way for the wildlife that use the river and the basic ecosystem that is combined in there. I unfortunately had the privilege of walking the river a couple of weeks ago from Highway 25 through Highway 7 to witness some of Mr. Jacobson's handiwork, and quite frankly, it was disturbing at best. There are areas in the river there that he cut back trees, that there was in excess of 40 feet of open water before he did any cutting. How this helped a canoe route, I'm not sure. Much of the debris was left either on the ice or just thrown up on the bank. When the river floods this spring, all that debris is going to be floating down the river to the neighboring cities. I don't know if we have an ability to show pictures, but I do have some pictures. If you had the time or concern to view that, we'd certainly like to show them if we could. Mr. Jacobson indicates that there's just a few people that are concerned with what he did. In fact, there's about 30 landowners that are quite upset with his actions. And in fact, at the council meeting that he talks about at Watertown, I believe this is how this stuff works here. If you can see this, a picture we're showing, you can see the cutting where he cut and left the wood on the river, and you can see where snowmobilers in the wide open portion of the river right there were, quite frankly, it wasn't needed to be cut at all to allow canoeing. Here's another picture where he did the cutting over here and left a little bit of debris. You can see where probably the end of the tree that is in the water, part of the ecosystem, is still left there, and you can see the water, the basic river water table on this site here. Clearly some canoes could go through this area right here, so what he was trying to accomplish, I'm not sure. Here's another portion where some trimming was done in this area, probably out to about here is where the trees were, and you can quite clearly see the complete opening here. And we have and this spot here you can see where the trees were just cut, the logs left on the ice, and here you can see where the opening of the river is over here. How this helps the canoeing, I'm not sure. Again, on the bottom you can see debris just left, and you can see the opening of the river over here. This particular spot here indeed is on the corner of the river where a large oak tree had fallen down and perhaps needed some trimming back to allow for canoe access. And the tree limbs probably came out to about in this area, and you can see where they trimmed and cut some wood up along here and got into here and then just basically left the rest of it on the ice. That is clearly, in the DNR's position, a violation to leave debris on the water. And we did contact the local game warden about that, and I know he did have words with Mr. Jacobson about his conduct down there, and advised him that it wasn't proper. So Mr. Jacobson, and I should get off Mr. Jacobson, I guess, because I'm really here about the bill in general. The landowners in that area are concerned that that waterway remains natural. It has a lot of wildlife in there, and by implementing this bill and trimming back the trees and opening up for supposedly a canoe route would diminish the wildlife quality and the natural quality of the river there. The landowners are not against canoeing in the river. They are not against people using the river. People snowmobile on it, they snowshoe on it, cross-country ski, canoe, kayak, tube on it. No one has a problem with that. What we want is to maintain it in a natural state that it is. And again, the bill that you have here, it's designating money to map and designate accesses and campsites, and that is the same as a park. And 18 months ago, or a year and a half ago, a year ago, there was a steering committee to look in the feasibility of a regional park along that stretch there. And after 18 months, three townships and the Harbor County commissioners all adopted a resolution to end the search or feasibility of opening up a park in that area. What this bill essentially can do is provide money for the proponents of this designating land to come in the back door and designate land again for potential parks or campsites. And when that happens, though it's not exactly the same as eminent domain and we aren't at that point, it stagnates any landowner's land that happens to be in those boundaries. And that is probably the landowner's biggest concerns. And as a follow-up, spending $60,000 to do a feasibility study and look into marking accesses and campsites that the DNR has already done and is on their website seems like kind of a waste of money that could be used elsewhere. And again, I would like to reiterate that the landowners that are concerned about this bill would like to maintain the South Fork as a natural waterway, a natural area where people can canoe it and view the wildlife that's there and keep it as natural as possible. And with that, if Mr. Neil Johnson to my left, who is a Watertown Township Commissioner. I think he has a few words that he might want to expand upon. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Griffith. And Mr. Johnson, if you'd state your name, please.
Hi, my name is Neil Johnson. I live in Watertown Township. I guess about the only thing I want to do is really just emphasize, first of all, I don't know how many of you have seen this. This comes off the DNR website. And it states perfectly clear in here, it says, although the north, the middle, and the south forks of the Crow River are all part of a state-designated canoe and boating route, the north fork is generally considered to be the main stem and the best for canoeing. So, first of all, this comes off the DNR website, and it does say that the north and the south fork are already designated canoe routes. And as part of your bill here, it appears to me that you're trying to redesignate something that is already designated. And then, secondly, the appropriation, $60,000, is said here is for the designating river access and campsites. Well, I have a map here, and I think some of you have also got a copy of this map, put out by the DNR, and it already shows the north fork of the Crow River on this map. It's all designated. It has mile markers on it. It has, it shows the historic sites. It shows boat accesses. So it's basically, it's all marked already. So you're going to pass a bill to mark the north fork of the Crow River, and it's already marked. It's already done. Then the south fork on here, you can see that shows the south fork, and it shows the mile markers, the little red dots along there are also. And this is right off the DNR website. So my question, one of my questions to you is, why are we duplicating this? It's already been done. And then my third question is on the $60,000 appropriation. You want to spend $60,000 to study the campsites and the river accesses on the South Fork. Well, they're already there. If you want to spend $60,000 looking at them, you can do that, but they already exist. We have the access, the campsite at Lake Rebecca Park, which is on the South Fork. We have an access in the city of Watertown, which is on the South Fork. And there is a new Carver County Park being built between Marin and New Germany on the South Fork. And that has campsites and boat access on it. So if you're going to spend $60,000 to study this, and it already exists, I don't understand that. And if you're going to designate this as a canoe route, and it's already designated according to the DNR right here, I don't understand that either. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Are there any questions for testifiers? Seeing that, yes, Representative McNamara.
Well, I'm just wondering if we can see the document, because the statute book, Mr. Chair, we can see the document, the statute book does not say that the south, north, and I think you called the middle forks, it does not, the statute book refers to the Crow Rivers. It does not say which ones, and that's why I'd like to see if that's something from the DNR.
Sure.
If we can see it there, that's great.
Can you read that? And it's the yellow part.
Jenny? What did we have? Well, you have it. Mr. Chair, I'm wondering,
yes.
If I could please, I'm just wondering, I know you've got a really full agenda. I'm wondering if Representative Szymanski would want to lay it over and we could get a chance to look at some of these issues. I think it's unclear here. There seems to be the statute book and the DNR, and I'm not sure who's here from DNR. I looked, it doesn't seem...
We have someone from DNR.
They are here. Okay, maybe we could
Mr.
get them.
Mr. Potter?
May I call him forward?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Potter. If you could state your name.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ron Potter. I'm with Minnesota DNR Trails and Waterways.
The legislation does authorize the Crow River, and that does include, as far as we're concerned, the entire river. However, our staff and our funding is limited, so we do focus on the main navigable part of any river. So the North Fork is where most of our attention has been given. If this committee would like us to make sure that more emphasis goes on to other parts of that river and want to further identify that, then we would certainly increase our efforts there. But most of our campsites accesses have been on been focusing on the North Fork.
Thank you, Mr. Potter. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize, Mr. Potter. When I looked, I didn't see you in the audience, so all I could see was the parks folks, and I thought, well, they're not going to be much help. I'm glad you're here. I've got a number of questions. The one gentleman showed a number of photos, and I'm curious, as far as deadfalls in the river, if it's designated a I happen to have had experience with a river and the canoeing, and our children always used to canoe a river right near my own hometown. So if it's designated a canoe route, and it's unclear whether this one currently is, though, if I understand your interpretation, let me clarify right now. Would you say this South Fork is a designated canoe route now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara. PNR, as far as we're concerned, it is part of the Crow River system, so it is designated.
Okay.
Mr. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Potter, then my question would be, I believe the gentleman's name was Mr. Jacobson. If it's a designated canoe route, I would assume to get a canoe through, you need to remove if there's a deadfall across the river. And we only saw photos after the deadfall was removed, so I'm not exactly sure how far the deadfall did go beforehand. What is there certain guidelines as to how much of the river or minimum? I mean, I can understand most of the time it looked like they were just clearing the channel of the river. Mm-hmm. And is that allowed?
Mr. Chairman, yes, for our staff, when we're out working on these type of rivers, we try to maintain a 6-foot channel.
Okay, Representative McNamara.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So once you've got a spot wide enough to make sure there's safe passage through a canoe, the rest you could leave for habitat for
correct
fish or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thank you. I think that's all the questions I have, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any further questions? Mr. Jacobson, you have one.
I just wanted to add what I feel is one very important point. When you ask the Department of Natural Resources or go on their website for recreational canoeing opportunities, they have certain sections of streams statewide where they have an official canoe route map made, and one of those rivers is the North Fork Crow River. And at this time, they do not have an official map made of the South Fork Crow River. And that's one of the purposes of this bill. If this bill is passed, the South Fork Crow River would have an official map made of it, showing the access points and things of that nature. And it basically would become a resource for the area. And then the DNR would take up the clearing of the tree snags in the future according to their protocol. So I just wanted to clarify that, because I'm well aware of the information on the DNR website. So,
thank you, Mr. Jacobson. As far as the, it sounds like you're primarily interested in the mapping of the rivers. Are you also looking, however, at signage and more boat accesses? It sounds like there may already be several boat accesses and campsites because it already has been designated. But I'm wondering exactly, how much more are you looking to accomplish with?
I guess on the South Fork, this bill would create an impetus to create more accesses and signage. And in many cases right now, there is no signage. And, you know, the public isn't really aware of the places where it's, you know, okay to access the river. So that's the accurate picture in that regard, is that, you know, the purpose of passing this bill would be to turn over then the maintenance of that as a true designated map state canoe route that would have these accesses and other recreational points, you know, called out on the river so that the public would be made aware of that. So,
any further comments or questions? Seeing none, I will renew the motion that House File 76 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. That was passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Seifert. And I will move House File 422 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Welcome to the committee, Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, I'm over-prepared as usual. I have a series of handouts for you. One of these. Okay, Mr. Chair, thank you. Members, appreciate your patience. Mr. Chair, members, House File 422 is a bill designating the Redwood River as a canoe and boating route. This is something that down in our area that we really find critical for tourism and recreational needs. It's been brought forward by the local community. We do not know of any opposition to this, and it has been out in the public, and we feel well accepted by folks along the route. And I have Mr. Tom Hollis from Redwood Falls here that can give a explanation of some details.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Hollis. I'm simply a citizen from Redwood Falls. I also happen to be the chairman of the Redwood Falls School Board, which might enter into the next bill that's introduced. But in some of the packet, one of the packets that's being handed out is a map of the Redwood River. Unfortunately, when it was emailed to Representative Seifert, the color did not come forward. It would be my hope that we could impose on Representative Seifert, because I'm sure it's still in his emails if anybody wants to see the color photos. The river already has a couple of access points that the DNR does have. What we're looking to do right now is simply designate it as a canoe area. Some of the prior discussion, the maps would be prepared, various signages would be prepared. The river is canoed right now. It's canoed all the time. With my working with the school, our alternative learning program, one of their parts of their program, puts the kids out on the river, and they learn just an awful lot about ecology. The river does not seem to have some of the points that our friends prior talked about. This is just, we think, a good first step for this area. The Redwood River flows into the Minnesota River. There's a couple of falls in the way, so if a canoeist wants to really take a little effort, they could get through. But on the Redwood, on the Minnesota River, there are plenty of designated campsites already, and that is included in the packet. So we think this is a good thing for our area.
Thank you, Mr. Hollitz. Any further testimony?
Speech is here for the next bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any questions at all? Seeing none, all those in, I will renew the motion that House File 422 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. And Representative Seifert, I will move House File 520 be recommended to pass to the General Register.
Aye.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair?
That is...
I didn't know if Representative Wagenius did not need to see it or anything.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right, we'll do that. Mr. Chair, House File 520 is a river trail loop extension.
I have both Mr. Hollitz and Ms. Shirley Beach from Sleepy Eye.
Judy.
Or Judy. I don't know why it says Shirley on there, but
I thought you were Shirley.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, but my LA must have put her name down. I was on a busy schedule. Maybe Shirley wanted to testify and say I'm too busy. But anyway, we have a couple testifiers to talk about this. This one we would refer to the one with the colored map on the front and the support materials inside there, Mr. Chair. You want to start, Tom?
Yeah.
Well, I'll start again. If you look at this particular map, you're going to see the words Tatanka Bluffs. And those of us in the area would like Tatanka Bluffs to have the same connotation that Bluff Country or the North Shore or the Gunflint has. We want this to be recognized as our area. On the back of that is the state of Minnesota, and the area is highlighted again. Tatanka Bluffs is a cooperation of people in the area that include Redwood, at this time, Redwood, Renville, and Brown counties. And we think we're unique when you can get that large a group of people to come together. What we're trying to do is put a big puzzle together. And if you've ever put a piece of puzzle out on the table, the first thing you do is you look for that first piece, and it's usually one of the corner pieces, and you start to build your puzzle from there. The designation of a bike trail between Redwood Falls and Sleepy Eye would be simply the first piece of a very large puzzle. Also included in your packet then is a sheet that looks like this. There's a number of trails that we've already identified that don't even exist right now. But our vision is broad and our vision is big. And once again, this is just the first piece. Judy can talk about the specific trail in front of you.
The Chief Sleepy Eye Trail is a very exciting prospect. I am Judy Beach, not Shirley, and I'm a newly elected member of the Sleepy Eye City Council. I'm not a stranger to the community whatsoever. I was with the chamber in Sleepy Eye for 10 years, and I also worked about 12 years with the Southern Minnesota Tourism Association on the executive board and as a regular member. My heart is with tourism as economic development. Our Chief Sleepy Eye, which you may note here on this picture, is a real likeness of him. He was a very upstanding, honorable man and went to, at that period of time, what he thought was correct, I'm sure, to sign treaties in front of President Monroe in 1824. D.C. Hall did a portrait of all of the chiefs there, and he has, so that's why we have his real likeness. We use that real likeness. I don't have the third postcard that we handed out, but we used that real likeness of him when Joanne Bird, a descendant of his, an artist from South Dakota, did our bronze, larger-than-life statue of him. And that is sitting very, very close to his obelisk, granite obelisk, grave site. In 1901, they brought his bones back from South Dakota, where he died, and put him in the ground near his home, Sleepy Eye. They tried to change the name of our community in the late 1800s to Lorino, and no one would have it. We have as our school, representative of our school is called the Indians, and we are very, very proud of this man. He was a very honorable, good man. To have a trail named after him is a great honor for us. The current history that I want to tell you about is that our community voted 2-1 to build a $2.2 million pool water park for our community. And it's going to have a splash pool and a lap pool and water geysers and all the fun things that children love at water parks. Plus, we will also have a community center and a new senior citizen center with that money. In January of 2000, the council unanimously approved the appraisal of land to move ahead with a 2.5-mile trail around Sleepy Eye Lake. The trail, Sleepy Eye
Chief Sepia Trail would hook into this trail around our lake, and it borders on Highway 4, and that is where the trail to Fort Ridgely, which is 10 miles north of CPI, would link. This is an exciting prospect for us. This development in our community to further tourism in our area, as well as the health issues that are so prevalent now in using these trails, is very, very exciting. And we all know that tourism dollars turn four times. The Mattowitz people, the family Mattowitz of the construction company in CPI, who owns the property that runs from Redwood Falls to CPI, where we would put Chief CPI's trail, is 100% in favor of this trail, as well as the Convention and Visitors Bureau, the Chamber of Commerce, and the City Council. And we will all work to further this great project. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. And Mr. Hollis.
I would just like to add that the Mattowitz family is very much willing sellers. I think in the Guinness Book of World Records, it is listed someplace this is the longest farm, because it is the width of an old railroad bed and 28 miles long. Halfway between Redwood Falls and Sleepy Eye is the Gilfillan Estates, which in August is the home of Farm Fest. And I do know that the people who run this venue have a lot of other entities in mind to continue to use that site. And directly north of Gilfillan Estates is Jackpot Junction, a casino and resort. And so we just feel that it just adds a lot of amenities to our area. And like I mentioned before, it's just the first piece of a big puzzle, and we certainly ask for your support.
Thank you. Any questions at all? Any further testimony? And I am going to change the motion re-refer it to the Committee on Finance. I believe it does have a fiscal note or fiscal impact. So we will then, I will renew the motion that House File 422, excuse me, House File 520 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, Representative Odinius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. It's good to be on this side of this table. I have three bills before you. I'm also very cognizant of the dinner hour. Do you have a sense of which one you would like to start with, Mr. Chair?
House File 1540.
I will move House File 1540 and ask that it be recommended to go to Finance and then on to Environment Finance.
Okay. Representative Eugenius moves House File 1540 be recommended pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance and then to the Committee on Environment Finance. Representative Eugenius.
Thank you. Members, in the Finance Committee at the beginning of the session, and many of you were there, we had some testimony about endocrine disruptors in our waterways. And I think a lot of us were surprised to hear that testimony, though we shouldn't have been, because there are big stories on the East Coast about burley fish and on the West Coast about burley fish. And I put in your packet a story out of Idaho about burley fish. We're hoping that problem of our male fish moving into being female is not as prevalent in Minnesota as it is in some other places. But it's also worrisome enough that the scientists who testified before us suggested that we look at ways of preventing anything that's an endocrine disruptor from getting into our waters. And so in the spirit of prevention, I thought perhaps it would be wise to ask the PCA to give us some guidance, and that's the bill you see before you. to see if they think that there are some strategies that we can prevent the entry of indica disruptors into the waters of the state. And with that, I'd be glad to take questions. I have talked to Mike Sandusky from PCA, who is here, who can tell you more about what they might look at or not. Because we would like to hear it in Finance Committee, too.
Any questions for Representative Genius or for Mr. Sandusky? First of all, thought I would announce that we are not obviously going to be moving meeting rooms. We found out that we can keep this room, and the plan is that we continue until we finish the bills tonight. So, any questions at all for Representative Wiggins? Representative Cornish?
No questions. I just would like to support your bill. I read the information you sent me on it about the chemicals getting underneath that one dam there and goofing up the sexes of the fishes. So.
Thank you, Representative Cornish. Have any other questions, comments? Representative Dell.
I was reading this same thing that you passed out. Is there nothing that we have, this is a question for PCA, nothing that you can do at the wastewater treatment plants that intercepts this stuff municipally that is less in net, less harmful to the waters than the stuff that passes through now?
Representative Genius.
Thank you. Good question. First of all, we're finding it upstream from wastewater treatment systems as well as downstream. The LCCMR bill that you voted on this year sent, I think, a little north of $300,000 to the civil engineer at the University of Minnesota, who believes that he can build a scalable model of treatment that can, and by scalable, he's talking about a pig farm or pig die to pull endocrine disruptors out of the water. So there are possibilities on that front. But it's possibilities, not...
So I've got another question.
Representative Dill.
On the ag component of this, is that come from then... from manure management or from discharges from the ponds when they reach the proper dissolved solids and oxygen levels and all of that? How does it get into the river? Does it happen from runoff? I sense it comes from the ag portion. So how does that happen?
I wouldn't dwell as much on the ag portion as on the human portion right this minute.
Yeah.
And I think that article that I handed out certainly talked about that. Sometimes it's the drugs we take and that get into the water system from our taking them. Sometimes it is the drugs we throw away by putting into the waste stream rather than putting into the trash can. So I think, and that is actually one of the things I'm particularly interested in. How hospitals deal with drugs, how we do deal with drugs that are left over. That, you know, you take a prescription and you don't use the whole thing.
Any further questions? Seeing none, Representative Genius renews the motion that House File 1540 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. And Representative Wagenius.
Next, I think on the agenda is House Bill 1913, and I would move that this actually does not have a dollar amount on it right this minute, but I would like it to go to finance with be recommended to pass to environment finance, if you would.
Representative Wagenius moves that House File 1913 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. I have an amendment, but I want to just tell you a tiny bit about the bill before I give you the amendment. We do not have definition of native prairie in our statutes, except in the place where we talk about prairie bank easements. And so when we are trying to refer to something, we have no uniform sets of statutes to use. So what I have done with the great help of DNR, and they do have folks that know what they're doing there, written up some definitions for native prairie. One of the groups that reviewed it is Nature Conservancy, and you will see a letter from Nature Conservancy, and in reviewing it, they made a suggestion that I thought was that fit right in and was helpful. And so with that, I would like to move the Amendment 64 to 64. And that's just a further refinement of the language.
Representative Wagenius moves the A070464 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Wagenius.
One of the things that happened when I wrote these up and had lots of help doing it, then I gave it to the revisor, and of course then they put it in alphabetical order, which means it doesn't make quite as much sense as if we were had them more in a hierarchy order. But I would turn four on the back to look at what native prairie means, because I think that is the most critical, and that's subdivision 5, and that is land that's never been plowed, where the native prairie vegetation originating from the site predominates, or if disturbed, the seeds from that site are the seeds that took hold again. That is not in our current statute. So this is a little bit broader than the Prairie Bank language. And I just wanted you to know that the unbroken pasture is in current language elsewhere, but that the undisturbed is not. And so I wanted you all to know that. So native prairie, the best management practice is described on the in subdivision 2. DNR is good about using best management practices as well as a lot of our groups, and we just wanted to list that. We list then two other things, which are native prairie, the local ecotype, where the seeds are very local, restored native prairie, which uses the big ecotype regions that DNR has, and then at the end is created grasslands using seeds with or plants with origins outside of the state of Minnesota.
And I understand Mr. Landwehr was here to testify as well. Is that correct?
I don't think he's here right now.
Okay.
But they did submit the letter, and he was the one that signed it.
Okay. So, any questions at all? Seeing none, I will, Representative Wagenius renews her motion that House File 1913, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. And Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. And third and last and is a bill on easements. And what this does is it has three very direct things, and then it asks for a report from DNR, which I understand they're happy to do. The first thing it says is that in an easement, parties to an easement must specify in the easement all the provisions that are to be perpetual. And these easements need to be filed with the county recorder. And then for management purposes for DNR to submit an electronic copy of the easement to the commissioner. Managing records like this in the old-fashioned way is difficult. In the LCCMR bill that you all saw, we had the records going to the commission by electronic means, not by paper means. One of the concerns that I think a number of you heard is we do not have minimum and legal and conservation standards that apply to easements that are purchased with public money, and this asks the DNR to make a report to us in January about what those might be.
Okay. If you have any questions or comments.
Good question.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair Egan, Chair Genius. Lands and Minerals had asked in a bill in the forestry from the department for a records management system. How could this bill play into the Lands and Minerals record management system as well? Can the two work in concert with each other so that we do something that has some synergy, or how did you envision this? In the Lands and Minerals, I think they need to keep the fee owners, who owns what percentages, the legal descriptions. It sounds as if the same type of information that we are trying to accomplish with regard to these easements for Forest Legacy and other things.
As I understand it, the department has sent out a request for a proposal to set up a lands management system like you're talking about. I have not seen the results of what they are coming back with and how they are proposing to redo their system. Hopefully, easements sent electronically can just be held and used in any kind of system that is developed. I know when I talked to LCCMR, they felt that managing easements electronically was extremely easy. And they just, their staff, and I don't know what she is called, and I don't want to give the wrong name for her, but her title, but who manages LCCMR, set up the website, done. So she saw that is no problem for easements purchased with LCCMR money. They will get them electronically and file them.
Representative Depp?
Well, it doesn't sound like we can get that reach out to help Lands and Minerals from the money that you described. To me, it seems as if it's a matter of record keeping, you know, all of that data that Lands and Minerals would want to, you know, assimilate into a database. I'm hoping that as we look, you know, that will be that idea is in the forestry bill or in the forestry proposal. I just hope that somehow we can kind of maybe merge those ideas together at some point. So we have better efficiency from both, maybe.
I think we have big problems in managing, and I look forward to seeing their specific proposals after it come back from the request for proposals when it comes back.
Any further questions? Seeing none, I will renew. Representative Wagenius renews her motion that House File 1421 be recommended to pass and re-refer it to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Next, Representative Dill, would you move the adoption of the division report?
I will move the adoption of the division report.
And Representative Dill moves the adoption of division reports for House Files 1417, 1235, and 1236. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Division report is adopted. We'll start off, Representative Junkie, with House File 1417. And I will move House File 1417 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, a lot of you were there last night, so I know we had about a 45-minute session on this with folks from Green Lake, property owners, Green Lake residents, and the Minnesota Lake Associations were in the room, and it was very interesting. I guess I'm just interested in getting this down to finance and seeing what our finance chair thinks. She was there last night, too, along with the good chairman, Representative Dill, although I think those other than Dill probably know a lot more about the bill because he was in a different space half the time.
Representative Dill.
Yeah, you know, I took some medicine right before this bill came, and so it kind of knocked me out for a few minutes. But I was the one that asked you, Representative Junkie, if your constituents knew that we weren't eradicating, we were only controlling.
Oh, yeah, you did have a question, Mr. Chairman.
But good. Again, members, for those of you who didn't hear an egg earlier, I told him that the reason I was sleeping is because I'm used to doing that when I'm around Representative Rocamina and Junkie and when they talk. So.
And I did, Mr. Chair, I did guarantee him when he was before our committee today that not only the chair but the entire committee would stay awake for his entire testimony today. So, and we did uphold that. But I'm happy to answer questions. You know, again, members that weren't there, in all seriousness, milfoil is a problem. Green Lake is a lake that's in a transition period between just getting infested and going full bore. And this is a time when we think some intensive biological or mechanical or chemical treatments could pay off big dividends. And we want to see a lake, and frankly the Minnetonka Lake Association and others were in support of this, to see if we can't get a lake and do some intensive work on it just to see and maybe be a model on what we can do around the state for milfoil control at this stage. So it's in all seriousness, it was a very good discussion. I actually learned a lot about it last night also.
Okay. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Discussions about invasives tend also to be pretty sobering. One of the things that we have been thinking about is holding a hearing in the fall because we have so many invasives. And they are taking, this is an example of something we continue to hear, and perhaps the state needs to take a bigger step toward working for some biological controls, among others, because I looked at the math of, you know, treating a lake and then treating a lake, and then you multiply it by 190, and then you multiply the other treatments by 600 lakes, and the multiplication gets really big, and the numbers get actually huge. So I think we have to have a discussion about what we should be doing.
And Madam Chair, and Representative Eakin and Madam Chair, as Representative Hackbarth and Osmond know too, I think that's a good idea. Particularly, I think we should meet with agriculture, too, because we do have invasive species. In fact, they're asking for more FTEs this year. Mm-hmm. And as you know, agriculture has the role of trying to prevent before it actually gets to the state. And once it's here, for the most part, ag does do some treatment on various things, but for the most part, then from that point on, it's DNR that is trying to control. So I think a meeting of both groups would be very good to try and discover what we're doing both before it gets here and then prevent it once it is here, eradication.
Representative Wagenius.
I should confess to members that I am intimately aware of leafy spurge and leafy spurge beetles, and I know that beetles in some circumstances can work and work extremely well. So we just need to talk a little more about things like that. You're not supposed to let people know you know about these kinds of things.
Any further questions or comments? Seeing none. I will renew the motion that House File 1417 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. Next, Representative Burns. Welcome to the committee, and I will move House File 1235 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to be heard today. We had a good hearing yesterday in Chair Dill's committee as well. I have the director of the Lake Minnetonka Conservation District here, if you have questions, and I'll just try and keep it brief. There are actually two versions of this bill. 1235 allows the committee to start small and see if it works, and that would be starting at a place where there's a very high risk of zebra mussels, Lake Minnetonka. The next file, 1236, is a little bit bigger, but it still asks that the DNR help prioritize where the biggest risk is. I'll just explain real briefly why this is important and then four things the bill does. The why, this is a permanent problem. There is no cure or biological control, and this would affect quality of enjoyment of our Minnesota lakes significantly, eventually affecting our tourism and property value for Lakeshore. This bill provides for prevention and not treatment. And you just heard from Representative Junkie about how big a problem milfoil is. At Lake Minnetonka, we are dealing with that, and the Lake Minnetonka Conservation District spends a lot of money, a lot of public funds for milfoil eradication and just plain control, and it's never going to go away. On top of that, local lakeshore property owners spend additional money. This allows us to take on a pretty significant problem, zebra mussels, and keep them out of the lake. Second, in talking with the DNR, I think there was a desire that the state move forward and address all aquatic invasives and not do it piecemeal. So I provided in language for this bill that this prevention shall be directed towards zebra mussels and other aquatic invasives. The same type of protection you'd take to prevent zebra mussels in will keep other aquatic invasives from coming in as well. It's basically inspections and enforcement. So it works for one, works for all. If you start protecting a few lakes in Minnesota from zebra mussels, you're protecting really, in essence, all lakes in Minnesota from the spread of all aquatic species. Third, this requires a local buy-in. Local units of government and lake associations will have to put their money where their mouth is and show this is a priority, and it allows us to stretch our tax dollars further. And fourth, in response to a request from the DNR, I provided language in here that allows for administrative costs to be paid through the grant program so the DNR is not put in the position of having to distribute the money without having a means to take care of the internal costs. So that's basically it. I really appreciate having a chance to be heard. I think this is important legislation, and it really affects everybody who enjoys water in Minnesota, which is all of us. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Burns. Any questions?
Any comments from the testifier?
Would you like? Question. Any questions? Seeing none, I will renew the motion that House File 1235 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Burns, to your next bill, I will move House File 1236 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Finance. And to the bill.
To the bill, I won't repeat what I just said. It's the same bill, a little bit broader, and I think it makes just as much sense as the first one does. So I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Burns. Any questions on this bill? Seeing none, I will renew the motion that House File 1236 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Burns. Thank you. We are now at the end of the committee, so we will we will adjourn until Thursday.